Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Florida Southwestern State College's Critical Thinking Lecture Series returns this month for two presentations. The annual lecture series features academic scholars and community leaders who discuss critical thinking in their fields of expertise, background experiences, or career or academic interests. This year's series kicks off tomorrow morning with a lecture called Identifying and Acknowledging Subconscious Biases with Dr. Mary Ellen Schultz. Subconscious or implicit bias refers to the attitudes or stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decisions in an unconscious manner. Dr. Schultz earned her bachelor's degree in liberal studies from California Polytechnic State University. Her master's degree is in education with a focus on bilingual education from Columbia University, and a doctor of philosophy degree in education with an emphasis on English as a second language from North Central University. Dr. Schultz, thanks so much for coming in today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
If you'd like to join our conversation, listeners are always invited to join the show by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So we're going to start this conversation in what might seem like a strange place, but tell us about your time in the Peace Corps in Costa Rica and how that connects directly to this presentation that you're giving on subconscious bias.
Okay, so I was in the Peace Corps many years ago. It seems like a lifetime ago. But it was really my first experience being outside of what we would consider American culture. And although I got many things out of that experience, one of the things that really stands out in my mind is how I realized that there were things about our culture that were kind of invisible that I didn't notice. Because when you grow up, you know, with a certain way and everybody acts and believes and thinks kind of the same way, you don't really notice it for what it is. But when you go to a different culture, you see the differences, and then it kind of heightens that difference. And so then you recognize some ways of doing things or thinking about things that are very different from what you thought everybody was always doing.
So leaving your home culture mm-hmm. and going to a new culture, it highlighted the fact that maybe there are some cultural biases. Like, did you immediately kind of think because it's different, it's not as good?
Not that it wasn't as good, just different, or that it was even there, I guess. For example, race, right? So a lot of things about race, I think we grow up a certain way, and we just assume that's just the way it is. It's always been that way. You know, me growing up, things were just always that way, and people were always treated a certain way, or there was a certain regard for different people for whatever reasons, right? And you kind of just think that's just the way it is. When I went to Costa Rica, I saw people didn't have the same regard for people of different races that we do. Not that it wasn't there, but it was different. And it really showed me, I really picked up on, there are some things in my belief system that are not like universal that I need to focus on. And I give this example. You know, when we talk about subconscious bias, I tell students, you know, we all have these biases, and oftentimes we are not aware of them. They're unintentional, but they're a result of associations that we make because of all the stimuli that we are exposed to, and we make these associations in our brain. And so as an example, and I really hate admitting this, I tell about when I was in the Peace Corps, I had an incident where a colleague of mine was involved in a motorcycle accident, and I had to travel with her to the hospital, and we had to meet up with the head nurse for the Peace Corps. And she was a Costa Rican national. I had never met her face to face. And they told me, look for Rosemary, and you need to give her the x-rays and all the records from the little hospital that we lived in, a rural community, and we had to take an ambulance in to the capital, San Jose. And I said, okay. So I'm accompanying her, and I arrive at this private hospital in San Jose, and I have the records, and I'm waiting to meet this nurse named Rosemary. I had no idea what she looked like. And people were coming up to me or walking by me, and there was a black nurse who looked at me, and I looked away and, you know, was still looking for this person named Rosemary. And she was the one. She came up to me and she goes, are you Mary Ellen? I'm like, yes. She goes, I'm Rosemary. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I stopped myself, and I remember this, even though this has been 30 years now, I remember it didn't affect my interaction with her, but I caught myself thinking, I just dismissed her. In my mind, for some reason, I did not think she was the head nurse of Peace Corps Costa Rica because she was a black nurse, right? And so it exposed me as, wow, why did I do that?
Well, it's interesting that sometimes those subconscious biases may not necessarily align with your professed belief system.
Yes, actually, there's a lot of research that even people that abhor discrimination, that really feel against it, that feel that it's they don't believe in it at all, we still have biases in them, and we can't help it. If you grow up in a society where that is sexist or that is racist, you can't help your subconscious mind. You can't control it. It sees those associations in the media, in the things that you do on it, and it makes those associations. Your brain has them. And so when you're making quick decisions or acting, doing what we call, fast thinking, as Daniel Kahneman says in his book, they come up and they affect the things that you do and the way that you interact with people.
So there are generalizations and there are stereotypes and there are things that society kind of makes and creates, uh-huh, whether it means to or not. And those end up becoming ingrained in a person's subconscious mind as a bias.
Yes.
Is what we're saying. So the job is to identify those.
Right.
How do you do that when you're not sitting in the middle of Costa Rica looking for a head nurse? How do you just not know until you make these kinds of fast thinking decisions or judgments?
Right. So the brain works in really strange ways, right? So in my presentation, I try to, because it is kind of a hard thing to wrap your mind around. So I try to show the students how sometimes our intentions betray us. We intend to do one thing, yet our behavior ends up being something else. And we do some little activities where they clearly see that. And so even though our intention may be not to be biased, sometimes as a result of these subconscious associations that we have, the brain wants to categorize things, right? So it's getting millions of bits of information all at once, and it's got to put things into, like, say, boxes in our brains, right? It makes these associations. And when we're trying to, interact with people and make quick decisions about who we should say hi to or who we should avoid or how we should respond to this or that, sometimes those associations just automatically pull to those little boxes,
mm-hmm,
that may not fit our conscious belief system but are created by all those associations that a lifetime has created, those boxes where, well, in the commercials, I see people of power as being this or – mm-hmm. So how do we identify them? Going back to your question, it's hard. You have to slow down your thinking and ask yourself oftentimes, why? Why did I make that decision? Why did I respond to that person in that way? Mm-hmm. Which oftentimes we can't do.
So, well, a lot of life moves fast.
Yes.
So and then it ends up not getting questioned.
Right.
And then you just keep going. So do some people have more of these unconscious biases than others? And if so, why do you think that is? I mean, is there a correlation maybe between how sheltered a person's life has been or what they've been exposed to in life?
No, I don't think so. I think we all have them. The difference is how aware we are that they can influence our interactions, our decisions, our daily the things that we do on a daily basis, our decision making, I guess. If we deny them, I think they have more power over you and result in behaviors and actions that maybe are not congruent with your beliefs. But if you acknowledge this and you kind of are introspective about decisions that you make or things that you've done, and you question and you stop and you pause and you think about it, then I think it's more likely that you can make better decisions the next time. Maybe, if you made a mistake once, and hopefully the next time you'll reshape that.
Kind of like exercising self-awareness, right?
Yes, exercising self-awareness. And the other part of it is exposing yourself to diversity and maybe things that are counter-stereotypical to change the associations. For example, I always talk to my students about how, when you were younger, what kind of toys did you play with? you know, and the guys will always say, oh, G.I. Joes, Legos, that, not all of them, but most of them will say that. And I say, well, okay, so you ladies in the audience, what kind of toys did you play with? And the women will always say, you know, oh, the little My Little Pony or the Barbies or the kitchen toys or things like that. And I ask them, well, how did you know that you were, the, you know, those were the toys for you? Did your parents say, you're a girl and you should only play with these toys, or you're a boy and you should play with these toys? No, they got those messages through commercials, advertisement, what they saw. You know, it, you know, you can go to the stores and you see there's an aisle that's mostly girl toys and, or what are supposed to be girl toys. And,
oh, I've been there a million times.
Right. So, you know, right. But there's not an explicit message there. But yet we receive that message, right?
Because they're categorized.
Yeah. And the colors that they use on them, or the images that show of who's playing with them, et cetera. So that's that association. So now what is that also linked to? Well, what are you going to be doing in the future, supposedly, right? So we're getting these messages. And then it becomes, even though we tell ourselves, you know, well, girls can be anything they want when they grow up and boys can play with whatever toys they want, we still look at it when you see a boy playing with a My Little Pony as kind of an anomaly. Well, that's different. Not that I'm not saying that we look at it as something wrong, but it does stand out in our mind because we are constantly being bombarded with these messages about what boys should be playing with. That's what we mean by it's there, even though consciously we can think differently. Oh, they can play with whatever toys we want. There are still those associations that are being built because it's pervasive in our culture.
Well, I kind of get reptilian too when I'm thinking about what about way back before society and all that, when you had to realize that, I don't know, saber-toothed tiger was really not a house cat. So like what keeps you safe and where does that fall into this?
Yeah, absolutely. So sometimes those associations are great because they help that fast thinking when you've got to respond quickly and you've got to duck because there's something coming at you. And so, yeah, a lot of times they're correct, right? But sometimes they're not. And that's when those mistakes get made.
And usually they're not when society made them up.
Right.
I'm just joking. I'm totally kidding. So your education has a big emphasis on language. English is a second language, things like that. How much weight does an accent have on biases? I find that really intriguing.
Yeah. A lot. I know, you know, sometimes students complain if they have a professor who has an accent and say, well, they don't really know what they're talking about. And it might be that, or it might be just because there's a bias because they think, well, you know, if they're speaking English with an accent, they really don't know English. You know, and we know that that's not true. An accent doesn't necessarily mean you don't know English or that you don't know your topic area or whatever it may be. But there, I think, you know,
I think there is a very subconscious bias behind a lot of that. I mean, even though you know better, you know they're a doctorate, they're a professor, they know what they're talking about. But just because there's an accent. But then it's not always towards the negative because I'm thinking of the slow drawl that airline pilots use to make everybody feel at ease. You know?
Yes.
So it's interesting how that can impact things in a positive way.
Yes. And it's also very cultural, right? I think in European countries, I think the bias against different accents is different than the bias that we have here, whether it be, you know, the accent of a Spanish speaker or the accent of a German speaker. I think the bias...
Yeah, different national, and then different even within the United States regions. If you have you know, I'm going to park my car, the Boston guy versus the guy with the Texas twang as your airline pilot, is it gives you a different feeling.
Absolutely.
So you're going to be leading attendees through a presentation to try to demonstrate unconscious bias. So how is that going to work? What methods can you use to try to get people to become conscious of something that's unconscious?
Right. So like I said, we do you know, I kind of work them through some puzzles and some different activities where they can actually see, like, for example, a Stroop test, which is when I don't want to give my presentation away, but I show them text and I say, just name the color of the font, right? And so that's really easy to do and they get it. And then it starts reading the color, like black, or like green, but it'll be in blue font. And then they get confused. Right. And then I have to stop them. I say, look, I said just name the color. Don't read the word. But their brain is wanting to read the word. So I stop them and I say, look, what did you intend to do? I meant to read the color. Then why didn't you? I don't know. And so that's an example of not necessarily subconscious bias, but how our brain isn't doing what we intended it to do. And subconscious bias works that way because it takes these associations, as I said, that happen over a lifetime of experiences of noticing what's going on around me, what are people, you know, that are that look like this are doing, or what are women usually doing, and when they have to make these quick decisions, sometimes it's not what they're thinking they should do, but it ends up being something else.
It's so interesting how the mind can kind of play tricks on you a little bit.
It is. It's something hard that I think is hard for people to grasp. So I try to do these activities where they can see, look, you meant to do that, but you didn't do it. That should be evidence to you, right? And then we do other things.
That it's possible for your mind to trick you.
Yeah.
Because we all feel like we're in control.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the whole thing with bias is a lot of us point our fingers at other people and say, oh, they're racist. Oh, they're discriminatory. And we think that's what the problem is in the United States. But I would suggest that there's also this issue of our subconscious bias that each of us have because we can't help it. We're exposed to all these messages about who's in power or, you know, who's whatever it may be, right? We have these stereotypes. And even though we deny them outwardly, explicitly, it still has a role in shaping the things that we do.
It really does. I'm talking with a very interesting conversation with Dr. Mary Ellen Schultz about her presentation at Florida Southwestern State College tomorrow morning on identifying and understanding subconscious biases as part of the school's critical thinking lecture series. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you could give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So we generally tend to hold implicit biases that favor. Do we favor our own in-group when we have these biases, or are there self-loathing biases that people walk around with?
Yeah, there are self-loathing biases. And again, it's based on those associations, even though you know, I may have been brought up to believe, oh, I can be anything I want, you know, even though I say.
In spite of the fact, right,
that I'm saying that is striking right there, right? You know, that women can become whatever they want, da da da. I still have my biases, right? And I give, again, here's an example. I was a high school teacher for many years, and I caught myself once doing something that I did not know that I was doing for a long time. And it was when parents would come for a conference with me, you know, I would have to get reports ready and student grades and have examples of student work. And I had this one parent coming. We'll just say it's Mr. Jones. I thought it was Mrs. Jones coming, the mom. And so I had gotten some records ready and ready to go. And it was going to be after school at like 2:30. And at about 2:15, the secretary downstairs calls me and says, oh, Mr. Jones is on his way for your conference. He'll be here right at 2:30. And I said, Mr. Jones? I thought it was going to be the mom. And the secretary said, no, it's Mr. Jones. And I said, okay, I'll be down there. I'll meet him there. And in the next 5 minutes, I thought, let me get a few more things ready. And I caught myself because if it had been the mom, I would have been ready to go. I had my stuff and I was ready to go. But when I found out it was the dad, I started getting more things together and feeling just slightly more anxious.
Like the imposter syndrome, right? You feel like because of being a female, you felt like, oh, well, he might be looking at me more with more scrutiny.
I don't know if it was that or just that I had this association that men were to be more respected, had more power in our society, and that I better make sure all my ducks are in a row. Now, consciously, I don't believe that. I believe that women and men are equal and deserve the same amount of respect and have the same access to power. But again, growing up in a society that I think we can agree there's still, you know, sexism here. Look at who's been president for the last every, you know, whatever.
We haven't had a woman yet.
Yeah. So I you know, it really caught me because I thought to myself, gosh, it's not just now that I do this. I always do this. Whenever I realized that every time there was a parent conference, I prepared differently if I knew it was a mom or if it was a dad. And then I even found out that even with my own kids, if I had something important that I wanted the school to know, like especially if it was a complaint, I'd have my husband do it instead of me. And I'm the one with the education degrees. My husband doesn't work in education at all. But I would prefer that he take care of it because I thought he would – and I'm right. I don't know if I have a basis for saying this. But I just felt like he would – garner more respect from people if he had a complaint to make or whatever it was that we needed to talk to the school about.
That's so interesting. I just find it really intriguing, this entire field of study. How long has this been a field of study? Has it been around for a while?
Yes. I'm not an expert in subconscious bias. Like you said, my background is really in education and bilingual education. I put this presentation together for our students because of all the things that were going on in the news with the recent events with the shootings and things like that. And I really thought, gosh, there's got to be something we can do so that we can kind of look at ourselves and say, you know, stop pointing the finger and blaming. Not that there's not responsibility out there, but if we could look at ourselves as individuals and say we all have, you know, things that we can improve upon to change things. And the subconscious bias, I think, is something that a lot of people don't recognize in themselves.
We talked a little bit about women's roles and men's roles and that kind of stuff with the unconscious bias or subconscious bias. Unconscious would not be.
I use them interchangeably.
lacking consciousness completely. Can society evolve to a point where it can change someone's unconscious bias? For example, 1950s unconscious bias building in a child would be different from maybe today. And even if I look at people that millennials, for example, versus people from my generation, one generation before, have a very different, it seems like, a different set of subconscious biases, which, while not completely rid of the gender role situation, mm-hmm. is a little bit less rigid or less extreme.
I would agree with you, but it's still there.
Oh, yeah, it's totally there.
It's still there. So those associations, like I said, still form. And even, you know, we do puzzles in class where I ask them things. And I agree with you with millennials. Like, I think they're exposed to more diversity and so hopefully less likely. But I know it's still there because I do this. This is a classic puzzle where I put this question up and it says, a man and his son are involved in a car accident. They go to the hospital and the doctor says, I can't operate on this boy because he's my son. And I ask, how could this be? And none of them, very few of them, can figure out, well, the mom is the doctor.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're all thinking doctor, man. And it's that association that we have. Well, who do we generally see as doctors? It's usually a man. Even though consciously we know, well, females are doctors. I've had a female doctor. Blah, blah, blah. But when they're trying to come up quickly with an answer, sometimes those quick associations, right, that quick thinking that, well, what does my subconscious say about who's usually a doctor? What does it look like? What's he like? It's the man image that comes out.
And you're talking about the fast thinking versus slow thinking, which you brought up earlier. And I'm wondering if we receive so much information right now that our brains are kind of only doing fast thinking.
Yeah. That's the work by Daniel Kahneman in his book. It's estimated we get over a million bits of information per second. So, and that's not just now because, you know, we might think it's just, no, that's just the way it always is. Our skin is always sensing things, hearing, you know, and we cannot consciously process all of that. So that's why the subconscious processes it and puts it into these little file boxes quickly and easily.
Because there's so much coming at us.
There's so much, it has to.
And it's not necessarily just because of the internet and social media. We've had, I think, since before the printing press, quite a bit of information coming at us.
Well, right. And like I said, you have, you know, even your skin, like your clothing. We don't feel it all the time, but your skin does, right? But we're not always processing it, right?
Not in part of the slow thinking part.
Right. Well, that's the brain, right? Yeah. The subconscious brain taking that information in and just filing it away. We're not even aware of it. Maybe at first when you first put your clothes on, right? But then after that, it's just normal feeling.
Do you think it's possible for someone to think slow enough to filter all these biases?
No.
Well, it's kind of like the golden pinnacle of the mountain to achieve that. I guess nirvana is what it's called in some cultures.
Well, no, I just don't think that's possible. We have to deal with interactions constantly and make decisions, so many in a second that, I mean, no. I don't see that happening. What can happen is people change those associations, right? As I said, if we have this idea of what the typical doctor is like, well, if we expose ourselves to more doctors that are females or role models that are females or look at biographies of female doctors or then we can change that association so that when we have to do that quick thinking and make quick decisions about, well, who could this doctor be? Our brain doesn't always think male. Right, it's thinking, oh, could be male, it could be female, and not really have that subconscious preference for thinking that it's a male.
There really is. And it's interesting. You're talking about how the brain can play tricks on us. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get out in front of it and play tricks on the brain before it happens. I recently heard an interview about how in some instances in the orchestra world, they changed the audition yes. process so that judges couldn't tell if the person was a man or a woman. Is that maybe evidence that we're becoming more aware of these unconscious biases and maybe trying to address them and trick that old brain before it tricks us?
Yes, that's a good example. I use that example in the presentation, actually. Yes, absolutely. Right. And even when they did that with the blind screenings, they actually even had to make people take off their shoes because people were realizing the gender when they walked up on the stage and the sound of their shoes.
Yeah. Everybody had to wear socks.
Well, I guess, or barefoot.
Socks only.
Yeah.
So what is the main message or point that you really hope that attendees are going to be able to get from this presentation?
Just that we think of discrimination and bias as being this overt thing that people do, and we kind of have this negative view of, oh, it's those people that do it. And most of us don't – we're not racist, or we don't believe in discrimination. We believe in fair treatment. But there is this thing called subconscious bias that all of us that we really can't help, right? If you grow up in a society that says men are like this and females are like this, you're going to have those associations in your brain. And the same with different races or different religious backgrounds or whatever it may be. And so we have to acknowledge that it's there within each of us, even though we can say, I'm not a racist, I don't discriminate. We have to look at ourselves and say, maybe I have done some things. Maybe I do need to, think about the decisions that I make. And I think that I'm not being racist, but let me look at that a little closer. I think I'm not being discriminatory when I pick this person or I grade this person this way or I like this person more or I vote for that. But let me look at that a little closely, right? Let me kind of analyze how I came up with that decision.
Well, it's really interesting in today's political climate. You hear a lot of people who are just doing things that are overtly racist, but then saying that they're not racist. Mm-hmm. And they kind of believe that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But they are. Is that the denial of their unconscious bias that's being kind of...
I don't think so. And so that's another part of it is we do these things, and I think Daniel Kahneman says this, we make these decisions based on our subconscious, and then what we do later is we justify it. So really a lot of the decisions that we make are not made with our conscious mind. They're made subconsciously. We make them in a split second because we have to a lot of times. And then we're spending the rest of the time after the fact justifying that, saying, oh, it wasn't based on race. It was based on because I thought he was more qualified than the other person. And we find reasons to support that quick, fast-thinking decision that we made that a lot of times we're based on those quick thinking associations that we have.
And then have you noticed there's a lot of anger, though, when you try to call someone out on their justification of their I wasn't really being racist. They just don't want to hear it. They're not going to hear it.
Right, because it's difficult for people to see that in their thinking. And I don't know, it depends on the examples. But
it's all the individual. It's an individual thing, yeah, person to person.
Right, but there are lots of statistics that support what you're saying, too. I give this example of people who are 6 feet tall or more, right? It's only 15% of the general population. But Malcolm Gladwell found that it's about 58% of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies that are 6 feet tall or more. And then you wonder, how could that be? Why is there a disproportionate amount of CEOs that are over 6 feet tall? Is it because they're 6 feet tall and they're better CEOs? No, it's because somebody, when they were making decisions, or several, many people who are on committees or whatever, boards, decided that this person should be it. And the height was a subconscious thing because we have this association with tall people being great leaders, mm-hmm. right? There's not scientific evidence to support that, but for some reason we have that image, right? And so people will pick that person maybe subconsciously and then later justify it and say, oh, no, he was more qualified because look at his resume.
Yeah, they want to justify
right.
it later.
Right.
That's
after
so interesting.
After the fact, yeah.
Well, we're out of time, but I want to remind everybody that Dr. Schultz's presentation on identifying and understanding subconscious bias is tomorrow morning at 9:30 at the Fort Myers campus of FSW, and it'll be simulcast at the Charlotte and Collier campuses. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with me today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Such a fun conversation. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation.